Welcome to the podcast. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast. This is Battle at the Big Table.
Welcome.
We will tell you our name even if you don't want us to.
Yeah.
With me, as always, are my co-hosts.
We're co-hosts. I never thought of that.
Yeah, co-hosts. We're tri-hosts.
Tri-hostesses.
Tri-host-i. I like tri-host-i. We're tri-host-i. My brother, from the same mother and father.
I'm Onion.
You want to call yourself Onion?
Fuck it. Yeah, okay. It's what everyone else calls me.
Good. Marble Onion.
And I'm Cake. We both have layers. I'm Likely.
Call me Parfait. I am Feather. I don't know if I said that. I've lost track of the conversation. Not sure what we're talking about anymore. Actually, today's episode is about Magic the Gathering.
Oh. Hooray!
Which,
I tap that.
That's high nerd culture right there, Magic the Gathering.
It's always high nerd culture when you have to spend a lot of money to do it.
the exclusionary nerd items.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I think that's like, the expectation is that it's going to be really costly, but I don't think you have to spend way too much to be into Magic, as long as you have friends who are also into Magic and are poor like you.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things that you can do. Like, first off, don't buy boosters.
Yeah, it's gambling.
That's a trap.
It's a gambling addiction.
Buy singles. Always buy singles. Even though you're spending like $1 on a card, that's way better than spending $50 on a bunch of boosters and never getting that card.
Okay. We're going to call this the space in which we paused the podcast to have a conversation with whoever just broke in here. Where are you going? Come here. You already ruined the podcast.
Wow, wasn't that funny?
Way to give me work.
I am all for the suffering of my brother. It's hilarious.
It feels like Bill and Ted when they're like, but we're the ones who go back into the past, so as long as we win, we get to go back and make all of this stuff happen. They're just making a bunch of random things appear. Like a bad guy's like, when I win, I'm going to put up a cage up there. And they're like, when we win, we're going to put guns in the cage. So it's just like, okay, you guys have to go back and do all this.
like now.
A long list of things. You guys aren't really qualified to be public.
But I guess you have time travel and infinite times.
Fuck it, let's go. Remember the trash can. Remember the trash can.
Yes. Magic the Gathering is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
It is, actually.
To be fair, they would have one.
A Bill and Ted Magic the Gathering card. Is that going to come
out? They're getting there, because they did The Walking Dead recently.
What?
Yeah, they did The Walking Dead.
I gotta go buy it.
They had zombies in Strahd.
They had, well, I mean, specifically, like, brands. Like, they did a crossover with Godzilla.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. That was,
Better, we have to go buy all these things now.
Yes.
We must become poor again.
Oh, God.
Become poor again, kid. I don't know if you noticed. We never left poor.
God damn it. It's okay. Because I don't care. I don't care.
Money ain't no thing.
Yeah.
Says all the poor people. Except poor people do need money.
All of it. I need all of it.
Yeah, but the news at Strixhaven, I was, I feel like there would be a Harry Potter crossover, but I haven't seen anything like that.
Hmm.
I'm just kind of out of the loop right now.
Yeah, but it's right. You seem to be more in the loop than all of us, so.
Well, okay.
I'm not a big fan of Joanne getting any money right now.
So, Strixhaven. Oh, yeah.
What happened to Joanne?
She's a turf.
Yeah. Not good.
Who's Joanne?
J.K. Rowling.
Oh.
That's what the J stands
for. Yeah, yeah. You know, she's always, the way that she goes down hills is always walking. J.K. Rowling. My friend's favorite joke.
Such a good one.
I hate your friends.
We're his friends.
I hate them all.
So the latest set of is Strixhaven, which is apparently a school for teaching magic, and there's five different houses, and that's all I know about it.
Cool.
Interesting. So it's very Harry Potter, so you'd think the connection would be there.
Right, yeah.
Probably.
Is the houses related to the colors?
Oh, yeah, always.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I think this one's an enemy colored set, which means in Magic, there are the five colors, white, blue, black, red, and green, and they're arranged in a wheel. So colors that are next to each other kind of have things in common, and things that are across from each other on the wheel are considered enemies. They're opposing. So, for example, white and black kind of embody light versus dark, or red versus blue embody thoughts versus action. It's those kind of philosophical elements that compose each color. And we could go on and on all about, right, like, the philosophy of magic, because it delves pretty deep.
It's weird how simple colors can mean so much.
Unless you're into philosophy, then it's pretty shallow.
Please don't start quoting Sartre.
Oh, no. Just getting yelled at by Ken Moon.
We get it. Okay. This is fine. We're fine.
Yeah. Don't you think it's so weird how, like, you think of certain things as so deep because you're kind of, like, getting into... like the shallow end of the pool and realizing the pool gets deeper as you go. But someone like who builds pools has their thing, like, it's like the shallowest thing I've ever seen.
What do you run?
And that's nerd culture.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, for the most part, everything has their complexity and depth. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily take away from other things' complexity and depth. Mm-hmm. So the very fact, complexity and depth. So the very fact that this is my second language. So the very fact that you know, there is philosophy out there, and there's, you know, a lot of different ways in which you can debate, view, and understand the concepts of light, dark, chaos, order, thought, you know, rashness, and all those different concepts. And there is, like, a deep level of complexity behind those arguments, and that in magic there's not necessarily much of a deep level of complexity in arguments in words, but there is a level of complexity in representation in the game itself, and I think it's just different levels of deepness that come about from, like, the different ways that the two things are presented.
Mm-hmm. The magic goes a little deeper than a BuzzFeed, which Hogwarts house are you?
Because like in real life, every faction has their sub-factions within them, and all of the colors have their sub-factions within them. You know, red has the spell casting factions and the speed attack factions, you know? Mm-hmm. People who choose haste over being able to burn something away. And you can combine and
So I think a level of popularity in magic is that you can, like with Harry Potter, view yourself in, like, the different colors, because they do have, like, an attachment to personality types. You know, blue being kind of like the more thoughtful, magic-based people. I mean, everything's got spells, but, you know...
It's Magic the Gathering.
But, you know...
blue has counter spells more than anyone.
Right.
And stuff like that.
So it's easy to kind of get absorbed into it, and that's, like, a big human need, you know, all this, mm-hmm. like... having a group to root for, having, like, a group that you identify with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's big in sports, where you have, like, different teams. like the Red Sox versus, you know, Madrid. That's a sport, right?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Manchester U!
Come on, we all know it's Barcelona. That's where the real soccer's played. I said soccer.
That is the real sports ball.
Real sports ball.
Sports ball. Ultimate touchdown.
But yeah, so there's this fun level of like, you can, you know, if you're more on the nerdy side, you can easily be like, oh, I love blue because it's all the smart people. But the reality of it is that there's more going on. Of course, any real human's going to be a lot more complex and just be like, oh, I one-sided am totally a blue person.
Yes, you see, blue is all about Tabula Rasa.
Yes. I often feel like a blank slate.
It's like there's nothing there at all.
But, and to a certain degree, sometimes, you know, what your preference personality-wise can translate to what you prefer to play, but it doesn't always work that way. You can maybe not be an impulsive person and not, you know, like, in daily actions to, like, move without thinking, but you might prefer the play style of Red, where there is a lot of, like, quick movements, you know, get everything done fast, because it's ultimately a game, and it's about what you prefer to play. Mm-hmm. And there is, you know, so that lens over it colors it a little differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example, like, in my day-to-day life, I feel like a white or a green character, but red's probably the color I like to play with most. I just like being able to blow things up. I like goblins and dragons. And I just like mountains. Mm-hmm. They're cool.
And now this is a picture that's on the red mana. So the way that magic works is it's got this mana system where you have a bunch of mana cards. So if you are playing a deck that's got mostly red cards, you're going to want to choose one or two colors, maybe three colors.
Or if you're like a crazy person, you choose all the colors and win anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should not do that. That's most likely not going to net you a good win.
Well, it depends. The thing is that this game is kind of built on the mana system and how it works. It's pretty genius, actually, because each color has the thing that it does. So, for example, if you're a red player, you like to throw lightning bolts, you like to summon goblins, you like... but you have weaknesses. You, for example, enchantments, which are magics that just permanently affect the field, or you can't do anything to them. All you can do is blow up creatures or blow up other players, but you can't remove enchantments as a red player. You also have a pretty hard time keeping up the long game, because red players tend to run out of steam after a while. So you might think, well, I'll add blue into my deck because I want to draw more cards, because blue has a tendency to get the things that it wants and play the long game. Or you might think, I want to go into green because green has the very large creatures and also can deal with enchantments. Green has a very hard time dealing with creatures, but red does fine with that, unless they're very large, in which green has large creatures to keep up with those. So it's very cool that you can spread yourself out into different colors to gain more abilities, but the bad part is that in order to cast those things, you need the mana base to accommodate that, and the more colors you stretch out to, the less likely you'll run into the mana that you need to cast those cards. So it's pretty ingenious.
Yeah. So if you got five colors and you draw your first hand and they're all red cards and the only mana you drew is blue mana,
yes,
you're not going to be able to play anything.
Yeah.
So there's a good amount of ways that this game has maintained balance. This game's been around for like older than me, I guess. I'm not entirely certain.
93, I think.
93, okay. It's younger than I am. You know, I was 3 years old when the game started. But, you know, there's a lot of different rules and a lot of different cards that have come out, but they've kept it fresh and kept it easy for anyone to start playing by having blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And they use a block system so that if you're going to like a tournament, most tournaments will use the block system so that the only cards that are legal are the ones that have recently been either reprinted in the current block or new cards that are made into the current block.
Mm-hmm.
Which keeps it fair for like newer players who are starting to get into it, because you don't have to learn the entire history of Magic. Mm-hmm. To be able to understand and play in any sort of tournament, gain new people, you know, meet new people that you can start playing with. And for the most part, I think I found Magic the Gathering people to be pretty welcoming and inviting.
Yeah.
There are a few of the snooty old-timers who have, like, impossible to beat decks that love picking off, like, new players and being like, how about you play me and I do use this horrific construction that
the ultra competitive gets angry when he's losing even though both sides are doing just fine and
I'm trying my best.
I'm just kidding.
I've lost enough in Magic not to be that type of person.
And also a nice thing about each block, the story of Magic is that you are a planeswalker, and what that means is that you can travel from dimension to dimension to different worlds, and with each block comes a different world. So, for example, they have Innistrad, which is like a gothic horror plane, or they have Ixalan, which is a plane of vampire pirates invading Mesoamericans who have dinosaurs.
Dinosaur.
Also, there's pirates. That's an important part.
Yeah.
But there's all these different worlds that they create, and they now they used to create like one a year, and now they're creating several. Which, from as a DM, is pretty amazing.
Right.
That they can churn out that kind of stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it's not like it's lost any luster. Those places are really interesting
and unique.
My friends.
We're not sponsored by Magic the Gathering or Wizards of the Coast, by the way. We just really like this game. We're barely sponsored by ourselves. We're holding on for dear life here, people. Nah, we like talking in front of a mic. We'll do this till the end of the earth.
Yes, you always love talking in front of me, don't you?
You haven't found a way to stop me yet.
You won't ever.
But, yeah, we just really like this game and appreciate the amount of detail and work that goes into them making this. Mm-hmm. And feel that there should be newer players that are able to come in and learn about this game. So if you've never played Magic the Gathering, I know there's a lot of stigma out there about it. But it's a really fun card game. It's not that complicated. And if you find the right people, you don't have to like spend way too much money on it.
Mm-hmm.
To make yourself a nice little deck. And there are pre-constructed decks that you can buy that are pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, didn't you tell me once about a story about how you beat someone who had their mega super deck and you just used a pre-constructed deck?
I love doing that. The linchpin that happened was I was playing a red-green pre-con deck versus someone's deck that they had a very specific combo that they wanted to use against me, in which they build up one creature to deal a lot of damage by using a bunch of cards to pump it up. And I almost thought that I had nothing in the deck that could deal with that, because he would make it in a way that I couldn't block it, I couldn't destroy it, and he used all the cards to pump up his creature to kill me in one shot, and I had a very simple green effect called Fog, which says prevent all damage this turn. Which was, I thought, was clever thinking in the moment. And he lost a bunch of cards, and I eventually overran him.
Attack!
Well, that's something you got to keep in mind when you're playing Magic the Gathering, is that you... So when you start the game, you start out drawing, what is it, 6 cards?
Yeah, 7 cards.
Seven cards. God damn it. I need more practice.
You start out with 6 cards because you mulligan.
Shut up.
Onion's famous for having bad luck.
I have the worst luck in this room. Oh my god. D&D, card games, general life.
You need to build a coin flip deck.
I would lose.
That would be amazing.
Learn
the power of luck.
I would actually love to see a coin flip deck. That sounds really interesting.
The really cool thing about Magic is that it's not only can you find stuff to identify with, it's incredibly customizable. So you have like your decks that you've come up with, these cards that you like, and you found ways to put them together in a way that no one else has. Or, I mean, like, you could be the person that just looks for the winning decks and puts those together.
Or you could even follow, like, obviously some of the decks have, like, built-in sort of ways to, like, play with them.
Yeah.
For example, one of the strategies that I built the deck around is they have an enchantment called Triskaidekaphobia, which means the fear of the number 13. And, Oh, wait, no. Is that the fear of the number 13? Well, is that the name of the card?
Or no, Triskaidekaphobia.
Oh, okay, good. Triskaidekaphobia is the name of the card. It's an enchantment. And what it does is that if a player's life is at 13, they lose. Mm-hmm. And every turn, you can choose to either increase both players' lives or lower both players' lives by one.
Mm-hmm.
And if after that, the player's at 13, they lose. And there's a strategy with another card, which is called the Tree of Perdition, which has a toughness of 13 and has an effect where you can tap it to replace its toughness with your opponent's toughness. So you could turn your opponent's life total into 13, and with Triskaidekaphobia played, you win. Pretty simple combination, but you can build the whole deck around, and I did.
It was scary for a while until it stopped working for some reason.
That does happen sometimes. The balance of the deck gets thrown out of whack and it stops pulling right. And then sometimes it'll just start pulling right again. That if you build enough decks, you'll find that happens.
For no reason at all.
Yeah, it's just heart of the cards.
The heart of the cards.
I hate it. I hate the heart of the cards.
That is something that can happen, is you can get what's called mana swamped, which is when you are only drawing mana, or mana drained, which is when you're not drawing any mana at all.
And you have all the creatures in your hand. All of them.
And all of that is based on the fact that there is a balance you have to draw with how much mana your total deck costs and how much mana you have in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the balance that most decks work with, it's a 60-card deck. I believe it's, 40 cards?
Typically, you want about 24 land cards in a 60-card deck. It depends on your curve. So, for example, if you like 7-mana cards, because 7-mana cards are very powerful, that's going into the long game, you're going to need enough land to draw into. But if you have a low curve, like, you can go to 20 land cards. It's very mappy.
When he says 7 land cards, he means cards that cost 7 lands, that you have to tap 7 lands for you to use it.
Yes.
And, so, yeah, depending on what the cost of your individual cards are and the total average of your cards, you'll want to move your land and cards around. 60 is the minimum.
Yeah, 60 is the minimum deck size.
But you can have more. It gets a little harder to calculate and figure out.
Yeah.
But it's not really complicated math, and there are websites. You can look up mana distribution websites that'll, even if you're splitting off into multiple manas, that'll quickly go, okay, you have this many costs and this many cards. You want more or less about this split.
Yeah. Some people build decks around a card. I forget the name of it, but it's an enchantment that says if, it's out on the field and you have 200 cards in your library, which is your deck, then you win. Yeah. So people build, 300-card decks around this. I built a 300-card deck, not based around that one. I built one based off of a card called Zombie Apocalypse, which is based around trying to take as many cards from my deck and putting it into the graveyard or the discard pile, and then casting Zombie Apocalypse, which returns all zombies from my graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah. All at once.
Yes, all at once. Just all of them.
And there are so many different cards and combinations that you can play with. There are basic card styles. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not card styles, deck styles that you can play around with and make different combinations of cards or decks that do these sort of things. For example, there's mill decks, which are based around the idea of making your opponent use up all their cards or have all their cards go into the graveyard. Because if you get to the end of your deck and there are no cards left, you lose.
If you have no cards and you need to draw, then you lose.
Yeah. There are also burn decks. There are an instance, a type of card called instant, which instants can do a variety of different things. They're notably used because you can use them on your opponent's turn or on your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Some instants can deal damage to either a player or creatures or even planeswalkers. The idea is that with a burn deck, you can burn out your opponent and attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And you start out with 20 health, typically,
mm-hmm.
20 life. So games can be quick or slow, depending on what type of decks you've built and how quick you are to take down those 20 health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of us have different skill sets when it comes to magic. And I tend to be decent with just creature base attack. So I'm really good with green and red. Well, my brother is really good with controlling the field. And Mike is the best out of all of us. But he's usually very much about flipping ideas on their heads. So I'll take really simple cards that people don't see as really good, and he'll make a deck around them that focuses on using that to the best of its ability. And they're really interesting and really weird.
The deck that he played recently was my Bazaar Trader deck, which is spelled B-A-Z-A-A-R. T-R-A-D-E-R, but also implies he's a very bizarre traitor. because his ability is target player control gains control of target thing that you control. What it looks like is this thing just gives away stuff that you have. And some people build decks around this to take things that do bad things to their owners and then give those away. I forget the name of them, not Bottle Gnomes, but there's one that if at the beginning of your turn it blows up and then deals damage to you. But I found a weird quirk with this card because of this specific wording. Target player gains control of target thing that you control. I have cards in the deck that allow me to take control of another player's stuff, but only for a single turn. Now, if I take control of their thing, I can use Bizarre Trader to give control of that thing to myself. And now when that spell runs out for the turn, I have control of their stuff for the rest of the game.
It's legitimately, like, when I realized what that did, I was so scared. Because I'm like, wait, you can just take anything from me? And I was lucky because I was playing against him with a deck that basically uses all of my creatures as cannon fodder. So I don't care if they die, and a lot of them have abilities where at the end of turn, it's dead. Which I always found really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's your haste deck. Haste is an ability. Because when you're playing the game, when you put a creature out for the first time, it enters the field tapped. And what that means is that it cannot attack.
It doesn't enter tapped.
Oh, I'm sorry. It doesn't enter tapped.
But it can't attack.
Right. That's something that some cards may have as condition.
Summoning sickness.
Yeah, summoning sickness. That's right. So that means is that it can't attack. When you play it, but some cards have haste, which means that they can't attack the first turn. So the idea behind your haste deck,
is to just summon creature, attack. If he kills the creature, that's fine. Throw it away. It doesn't matter. Next turn, summon new creature, attack. Mm-hmm. Basically, the way I thought about it is what is the most straightforward way to kill somebody? And then I realized that most decks take at least 3 turns to set up something of a defense, and if I can kill that thing and get to the person before the 4th turn, I can probably win. Turns out that's a lot harder to say, it's a lot easier said than done, but hey, it's a lot of fun to just throw things at a wall until somebody dies.
In Magic, we call that goldfishing, because you're ignoring everything that your opponent's doing and pretending that they're a goldfish, and as if you're playing against a goldfish.
Wait, have I been doing that to people? Aww!
Well, some people play that way, because a deck like yours is very combat-centric, which is very interactable. So, not necessarily. But, imagine, if you were just playing out creatures against someone who's completely helpless. We call it goldfishing. But some players actually do this because they are specifically, for example, a combo player. They don't really care about what you're doing. For example, a player like you, who is trying to take their life from 20 to 0, what they're trying to do is not care about what you're doing, but trying to find, 2 or 3 specific cards and trying to play them, because whenever they happen to do that, it sets off, an infinite combo. For example...
you try to do this.
One card that says, whenever an opponent loses life, you gain life. And then another enchantment that says, whenever you gain life and an opponent loses life, and when both of them are on the field, it instantly triggers an infinite loop that they lose life, you gain life, therefore they lose life, therefore you gain life, and until they're dead.
They die.
I was going to add that combo into my life gain deck.
He does this to people. I never knew it had a name. I just thought it was a thing some people did. He does that. He tried to make a deck. Explain your bug deck.
I don't know if the bug deck necessarily counts as that. It's not a bug deck. It's a Dose into Perfection deck. So, and I was actually going to talk about this deck anyways, because I was going to bring up the fact that what I really like about Magic is that, yes, you can go the more complicated route, and if you find that, way of, thinking about a card that gives you that good idea to build the deck, like Mike is really good at doing, you definitely do that and go that route, but you don't have to always like think about cards that way or think about cards that hard, because there's already a lot of built-in ways that cards interact with each other and work with each other. You can easily, like, if you like werewolves, there's werewolves, and they have good interaction with them. They have good ways that they bounce off each other. Yeah. And you'll find very easily, you'll see, like, ways you can build a specific type of werewolf deck. Like, you see cards that are like, oh, these three cards kind of interact with each other in this weird way. And you can build on that. For example, my Dose into Perfection deck is a pretty simple design because it's not anything very complicated. I didn't, like, find some secret loophole or anything inside the cards. It's just there's this one card that I have to look up the because it's a card that's actually... So what's really fun about Magic is the cards, since they've been made over many years... And they have little, like, taglines. Some cards have, like, little stories that you get throughout many years. The Dose into Perfection being one of those. Now, I'm not going to be able to tell you the exact release date of the way these cards were released. But I will tell you the story behind this card, which I did kind of fall in love with. Let me get this really quick here.
I feel like this is the part of the podcast where you cut it off for a bit and start playing elevator music. And our story begins in Innistrad.
Yes.
With a card called Dover of Secrets.
Yes.
A simple, for one blue mana, a 1/1 with a triggered ability that if you reveal the top few cards of your deck and you find an instant or sorcery, you may transform him and he becomes a terrifying 3/2 flying insectile aberration.
Is he actually talking about the red deck?
Yes.
Oh.
That's the story. Yeah. No, Mike is doing it. Mike is doing the
thing. Mike, how do you remember a card that he
used? I'm looking it up. Mike's got it memorized.
No, I live this.
Mike.
Delver of Secrets has been one of the most polarizing cards among the internet base because people see it as blue has better creatures than green does. This is not good balance. It's a 1-mana 3/2 flyer, ignoring the part that you have to complete certain requirements about it for it to be that. But green doesn't have anything that good. Why does blue get the overpowered card? And it's like...
Because green, in order to get all the mana, needs to get the fucking thing, same thing for way more expensive.
It's a fine card, and it was good during its block, but it's, like, nothing game-breaking. It's just a... It's, like, the fact that it's a common... It's a 1-mana, and it can turn into such an aggressive card, and people see blue as the color that has the worst creatures...
And it's the slowest to build up.
But it just turns out that this card is pretty good. Enough to inspire decks that work with very, very old cards. So in larger formats, there's definitely Delver decks that are built around this card.
Those are scary. We should look into those.
So there are cards that do, as Mike said, a flip. So there's typically most cards you'll have just a card on the front, and then the back is the Magic the Gathering background image. But these cards will have two cards on one card, one on the front and one on the back. And what it is, like Delver of Secrets, which Mike was talking about, He once conditions are met, can flip and become a different card. Werewolves work in the same way, which is interesting. You know, they start out as humans. Once conditions are met, they flip and turn into werewolves. The interesting thing about werewolves is that the conditions can be unmet, and they can flip back.
Yeah. That's fun.
Which is, you know, great. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Delver of Secrets, his, as Mike said, condition was that at the beginning of your upkeep, which is at the start of your turn, you can look at the top card of your library and reveal it. If it's an instant or a sorcery, which are pretty strong cards in the blue, then you can flip it. And then it becomes a flying card that's 3/2. Flying cards can go over most cards, which means that you can't be blocked unless the card has reach or is also a flyer, which can be pretty helpful when you're fighting, you know, people who don't have reach and they've got a lot of monsters out there. You can still go over those monsters because they can't block you and proceed to attack. Now, then later... So, Mike, you said Delver Secrets was in Innistrad?
In Innistrad.
Right. So then, at Shadow over Innistrad...
Shadows over Innistrad.
So I will be able to tell you. Thanks to Mike's encyclopedic knowledge.
Just things.
I'll be able to tell you that Aberrant Researcher was released. And Aberrant Researcher... had the same sort of flip ability, but the difference was Aberrant Research. So Delver of Secrets was a human wizard. It was his creature type. After he does the flip, he becomes a human insect. Mm-hmm. So Aberrant Researcher is a human insect who has flying. He's actually now become a 4-cost, which is a lot, but it's not... out of, you know, it's not a crazy cost, but it's a 3/2 flyer, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you look at the top card of your library, you put the top card of your library into your graveyard. If it's an instant or sorcery, then you can transform the card into a 5/4 flyer, and the taglines that these cards have is when Delver of Secrets turns into the second form that he has, which is called Insectile Aberration. The tagline says, Laboratory Notes, Final Entry. Unfortunately, all my test animals have died or escaped, so I shall be the final subject. I feel no fear. This is a monumentous night.
Mm-hmm. So in Innistrad, they were doing a Gothic horror thing, so they were doing a lot of horror tropes. They made cards based off of like Dracula and stuff, and this card is obviously a nod to
the fly.
Specifically,
Jeff Goldblum's fly.
I don't have specifically Jeff Goldblum's fly. I mean, he doesn't have a big bulbous head, so...
He should have a big bulbous
head. Actually,
that's just a missed opportunity.
Aberrant Researcher is a reference to Superfly.
Superfly. Really? I thought he was more of a super freak.
Ooh. Super freak.
So, Aberrant Researcher is the next card, and its tagline is, Metamorphosis is a process, and it has another tagline on the transformed version, which is called Perfected Form, and its tagline is, the final pages of the experiment log were blank, investigation found it abandoned on a desk in the researcher's lab, open the pages flipping in the wind from a shattered window. So you know, we have him turn into a human insect with 3/2 flying. Then he turns into an insect horror called Perfected Form with 5/4 flying. And then the final card is Dose into Perfection, which the tagline says, the time had come for him to share his findings. And he is a costly card, 5-cost blue mana. He's a flyer, 5/4, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you can put a 1/1 blue human wizard token onto the battlefield, and then if you control three or more wizards, transform Dose into Perfection. And when you transform Doz into perfection, he has final iteration is the name of this transformation. He's become an Eldrazi insect, which Eldrazi is sort of the ancient horrors of this particular block.
It's a combination of Galactus and Cthulhu.
Yes. And he's a flying, and wizards that you control get it plus two, plus one, and have flying. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. So what I'm saying, when I brought up these cards, I brought them up because what I was saying is sometimes these decks are pretty simple to make because for Doz into Perfection, it is a costly card, but something that's interesting is that its condition to be met is just that you must, one, it's good to use a lot of instants or sorceries in this deck, which are really helpful to keep control of the game. And to, you know, stop your opponent from doing certain things, and to keep your opponent from, you know, taking you down, which are would give him blue human wizard tokens. And the other condition to be able to transform is that you must have three or more wizards, but they don't have to be the wizard tokens. Mm-hmm. So I simply made a deck with a bunch of wizards. So that whenever I summon this card, it could transform really quickly because I don't have to spend a lot of time creating tokens. And then also, once the card transforms, all the wizards get plus two in flying, regardless of what their actual toughness and strength is. So if you have a wizard that's, you know, three cost, two toughness and two strength, wizard, then it gets three, or two, one added to that and gets flying.
Mm-hmm. Which is super, super good.
So you can get a bunch of creatures with a lot of strength and flying pretty quickly on, and it's not a hard, you know, thing to grasp. Like, the card tells you right there what to do, essentially,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. For your deck construction.
A nice reference there, too, with the final iteration. Giving all your 1/1 tokens plus 2 plus 1, you are turning your 1/1s into 3/2 flyers. Yeah, just like the original Doubler of Secrets turned into Insectile Aberrations.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Magic the Gathering can have really fun stories across different cards and different blocks, and also it's really easy to make your own brand and find your own style and find what you prefer. They're vampires, wizards, mermaids.
I just realized something. We're just making introductions to games we like.
Yeah, we're just making people like the games that we like.
Hopefully. We should write introduction to games. Like, that should be the title of these things.
Pop quiz. You know the card Ranker?
No.
Ranker is one green to give a creature plus two plus zero, and when Ranker goes to the graveyard, it goes back to your hand. Pop quiz, what's its flavor text?
Well, if he doesn't know that.
Oh, wait, no. Is it Clever Girl?
Nope.
Damn it.
Hatred outlives the hateful. Which is very nice flavor text.
And I feel like that's a good place to end this podcast. Hatred outlives the hateful. Always remember that from your friends here at Battle at the Big Table. Please like, comment, and subscribe if that's a thing you can do in the wherever it is that you're listening to this. if you don't know this, we do have this on YouTube, and there are also probably other videos that we plan on doing and putting on YouTube. So go to Atomic Station. It's not called Battle at the Big Table because I like to make things complicated.
Just like magic.
Just like magic.
And remember, the whole point of playing a game is to have fun with other people, not to hurt people.
Remember, play games, do stuff.
Play games, do stuff. Always hate everyone because hate outlives the hateful. Goodbye.